Now, on the line from Wellington, John Mewson. John, are you there?
I am.
Excellent. I'm so glad I've got all the buttons right. John Mewson, thank you so much for giving up some time on your Saturday morning. I know how busy you are. John, of course, is a local board member here on Waiheke, but he is also chair of the Hauraki Gulf Forum, which made some pretty amazing announcements this week. And so John's joined us this morning just to talk about these new proposals from the Hauraki Gulf Forum, which is to significantly, in fact, quite radically increase the coverage of marine reserves in the Hauraki Gulf. Now, I'll get to some questions shortly, John, but just to introduce the issue, I suppose, at present only a tiny percentage, this is a quote from yourself this week, 0.3% of the marine park, that's the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park, of course, is covered by no-take marine reserves, and we need to dramatically lift our collective ambition, which I think is a beautiful statement. And the Hauraki Gulf Forum has suggested that at least 20% of the waters of the 1,000 square kilometres, 12,000 square kilometres of the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park be protected, and that include restoration efforts to establish 1,000 square kilometres of shellfish beds and reefs. Wow, that's a big move.
I call them big, hairy, audacious goals.
Big, hairy, audacious goals. Very well put. So, John, let's go back to just why this is so required. The Hauraki Gulf Forum came into existence, as I remember, in about 1999. Can you explain to us, for those of us who aren't that familiar with it, because it's not based on Waiheke or anything, and it has representatives of a whole bunch of organisations and groups that have some interest in the Gulf, can you give us a rough idea of who sits on the Hauraki Gulf Forum?
Sure. So in terms of local government, it's both the Auckland Council, which these days, of course, is the super city, but when the forum was created in the year 2000, in fact,
okay.
There were seven councils in Greater Auckland that were members. So the Auckland City Council, the Auckland Council, the now council, has seven members on the forum, two of which by right as of the Act are Great Barrier and Waiheke, which is why I'm there.
Yep.
Then there's five councillors. There is the Waikato Regional Council and Thames Coromandel, Matamata Piako, Hauraki, and a small part of the Waikato District Council. So four district councils and the regional council, because they have areas that in some way or another disperse water into the Gulf. So that's the local authorities. Then yep. There's Ministry of Conservation and Fisheries and TPK, Moray Development Department, the three central government agencies, and then the Minister of Conservation appoints six Tangata Whenua members who are intended to represent the interests of the 26 iwi that have an interest in the Gulf, in the Marine Park.
In the Marine Park. So it's important, I guess it's fair to say then, that there's a very wide and disparate number of groups who are represented on this forum.
Indeed.
And they've all got different interests. Perhaps on Waiheke our interest is more in conservation, although we are also users of the Gulf, not just protectors of it, and so on. But then there's farming organisations that have farms in the Coromandel, that sort of area, and further up north, what used to be Rodney and all those places. So it isn't just those people who live on islands in the Gulf that are represented by the forum.
Any people that and or organisations that have water that goes into the Gulf. So the Marine Park actually includes all the water catchments on land.
Mm. So for every 3 years since the Gulf Forum was begun in 2000, as you correctly point out, it was formalised in 2000, I think, first kind of got on the radar in 99. But every 3 years the Gulf Forum puts out a report called the State of the Gulf, I think it's called.
State of the Environment.
So while not all groups are necessarily environmentally focused as other groups, the point is around the environment and health of the Gulf.
Of the Marine Park,
I hear you. Yeah. So every 3 years they've put out, the forum's put out a report, and is it fair to say, John, that over the number of reports that it's put out, it's fair to say that the health of the Gulf continues to decline at alarming rates?
Correct, with one exception, and that's the massive work done by many, many, many people, funders, contributors, volunteers on the best free other restoration of most of the islands in the Gulf.
The islands are an incredible success story for restoration and
they are indeed. need, and yep. we shouldn't forget that. But
no.
because the marine environment, you're right, it has steadily declined. Stocks of various kinds of marine life have gone down. Kelp beds have, you know, virtually disappeared in great swathes of the Gulf, etc. Because of those influences, it's not just what's below the water that's gone down, it's also the seabird life.
Yes.
I think I read somewhere we have something like a representation of 25% of the world's seabird species either temporarily or permanently live in and or on the marine park.
Right.
So it's a massively significant globally resource that we need to rejuvenate.
So the stock numbers are down, species varieties aren't as strong as they should or could be, and the trajectory is not encouraging. So this is a very bold statement by the forum. As you said, great hairy objectives or something like that.
And we've particularly picked on them because, in fact, we are making now, finally, despite population increase, which is a continuing challenge, and of course whatever will happen as a result of climate change, but notwithstanding that, it has to be said and give credit where it's due, the two regional councils especially have raised the bar a lot in their efforts to restore or to reduce the effects of sedimentation and nutrients and other pollutants that are coming down the waterways.
Yep.
And while there's a massive amount more to be done over the next, say, 10 years or so, and that will have a bearing, of course, on the quality of life in the Gulf for a variety of reasons, it has to be said that, you know, my personal view is that the trajectory there has been turned. Auckland is at large, voted to increase the level of funding on a targeted rate basis to the highest level that was put to them about 18 months ago or so. You know, you're talking literally hundreds of millions of dollars devoted to the environmental improvement program. So, you know, in the general run of that side of things, things are improving or at least on the back, going back up.
And so
The area that's not going better is anything to do with fishing in the broadest sense, and the habitats in which fish are breeding or not breeding, and that's why we've settled on these two, because we've got a whole raft of strategic issues that we're working on.
But the two that you've sort of pushed to the front, is that fair to say? At least 20% of the waters be protected.
Yes, some form of protection, significant protection.
So
I'm making it clear.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting in any way that you're proposing a 20% marine reserve. That is not what you're actually saying, is it?
No, although my personal view is that it needs to be at least 10% no-take.
Yeah.
Because if it is, either temporarily or permanently, preferably the latter, of course. But with Maori interests, we have to acknowledge that that the traditional rights, customary rights have to be looked after, and it may be that we can gain what we'd usually take from a no-take reserve through rahui and other traditional methods of making sure restoration, rejuvenation does take place.
And the sort of point of the rahui is that it can be moved from place to place where it's needed, right? Whereas a marine reserve is actually a statutory declaration.
Correct.
Yeah. But what obligation do New Zealanders have to follow a rahui? I mean, I would, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure most people I know would, but what about those intransigent characters who don't care about these things?
Well, they can operate and do in no-take reserves as well. I mean, it's pretty hard to police this stuff. So one of the things that comes with this goal, if we're to meet it, would have to be increased monitoring.
Mm.
But even there, the good news is technology is making these things so much more cost-effective. Mm. You know, the satellites, that bless them, while they have some downsides, I'm sure, in most people's eyes, they have also got some great potential to be very, very intrusive, if you like, to people who misbehave.
Yeah, we could be using satellites, and we probably are, to track everything from whaling in the Southern Ocean right through to the quality of...
Right, but, you know, even little things like, no, I shouldn't say little, they're quite big. How do I know I'm in the marine reserve?
Yeah, well, how do you know?
Right?
How do you know?
Well, in the future, we've just about everybody now has got GPS, even if they've only got their phone with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, these things have to have some common sense around where they are in terms of being able to take that headland or that island or whatever and sort of give yourself broad positioning. Precise positioning is in almost every fisherman's hands already.
Yeah. The other large thing, or the second of the two main spearhead recommendations, is that restoration efforts establish 1,000 square kilometres of shellfish beds and reefs.
Yeah.
I did hear something in the media, it must be close to a year ago now, where the national radio was talking about the restoration of mussel beds and the speed with which, and it's an astonishing speed with which mussel beds can actually filter the water. And if we had large amounts of mussel beds still in the Gulf, it would be filtering the water in the Gulf twice a day. Now that's just out of my memory. I'm sorry, not at some sort of scientific.
Yeah, no, that's about right though.
Yeah,
and it's fantastic.
So those shellfish beds are a lot more important than just providing shellfish for future take.
Absolutely, and there's an area that hadn't occurred to me before, but there's a massive project going on in New York as we speak. They call it the Million Oyster Project, I think.
Mm.
And part of the reason they're doing it, apart from the obvious, is to act as an anchor against the shore erosion from storms and the like. We used to have, apparently, the guesstimate is 1,500 square kilometres of mussel, or sorry, of shellfish reefs, scallops, oysters, etc. If we can get 1,000 of those, particularly in those places where they have the greatest impact in terms of calming the sea, you might say, then over above their intrinsic value as an anchor for all sorts of marine life to gain feeding grounds and all the rest of it, they're fantastic breeding sites, and they grow on themselves, if you like.
Mm.
And another piece of good news on that is that there's been a bunch of very knowledgeable people over the last 4 or 5 years doing the seeding of mussels in a variety of settings and learning what we need to learn to make this goal a reality.
Mm. It's amazing. The Hauraki Gulf Forum isn't, however, able to make laws, is it? It can only make recommendations.
Correct.
What's amazing about this moment, from my point of view anyway, just as somebody who lives in the Gulf, is that 20 years after it's been formed, the forum seems to have worked through all its stuff and is now in a way more unified than ever before. Is that a fair point?
With some exceptions, but the bottom line is the state of the Gulf, plus, and it has to be acknowledged, there's another thing that went on, and it's something called the sea change. Taitimu Taipari exercise, which was a spatial planning process, as they call it, which in some ways is a sort of an attempt to try to allocate things in various ways of the Gulf. That came up with masses of recommendations that we ought to use and will be. They form part of those strategic issues I mentioned earlier that the forum's focusing on.
Mm.
And the ministers of conservation and fisheries are currently creating a committee that will take that sea change report and those elements of it that are recommendations that central government has to implement.
Mm.
They'll be looking to see how they can make that happen. So this is all complementary. So yes, it's taken us 20 years to get here, it's true, but I think it's also taken the community and the world at large to recognise, we've got to do stuff now, or else we're seriously going to lose this. Well, in some measure, we've already lost sea life.
Yeah, that's right, but not to the point where we can't help it come back. That seems
no. It's amazing how quickly it restores. You know, we had the Rena crash, the boat in the Bay of Plenty. In the space of about a 4-year Rahui, masses of recovery of sea life. It's just amazing. Apparently,
sea life has an incredible resilience, doesn't it?
Yes.
So
and it's a rich set of waters.
Who actually has to take on this, John, to make it effective in a regulatory sense rather than just a recommendation?
Well, it is a combination of central and local government when it comes to regulatory and legislative stuff, e.g. the reserves and protection is mostly central government, although regional governments can have a role, and there's actually a court case going on in the, I think, Bay of Plenty right now to try to settle just what powers regional governments might be able to have in this arena. But whatever, I mean, if there's a will, there's a way. So, and that's part of the beauty of what the significance these two goals have sort of brought to bear. There's a massive reserve of goodwill by the population of Auckland and visitors to doing good work here, and that of course adds weight to central government listening. And I'd have to say Minister Sage is listening very, very well and very proactively. A lot of the action will be there when it comes to rules. But actual work, for instance, the shellfish, that will take the community, and it's really good that that this is the case. The community of Auckland, school children, all sorts of voluntary groups, the people working, and there's a heap of them, trusts on all these islands that have done such great work, that they start to look below the waterline around those islands and contribute to this, to achieving these goals.
Yeah, and there are all sorts of different little people groups and involved in all sorts of different ways across the Gulf, from the people who own and are so wonderful about the noises, the Rakino community. Somebody told me the other day there's now 1,500 Kiwi on Ponui. That's just extraordinary to me. And that was a great source. That was Ian Burrows from the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust. There are amazing above the water things happening, but we really need to connect with below the sea, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And when do you think we can start to see? I know it's a hard thing to ask a politician when, because so many other people and processes and objections and appeals and so on are involved. But can we go back to sleep for a year or two, or should we be working on this as a community now?
No, we'll be working on this, and part of that will be a raising consciousness. So there'll be a continual effort to keep raising the bar on the amount of publicity, etc. this gets. But the forum itself for the next few months will need to just focus. Now that it's got the goals passed, we can focus on the how of things. So just today, one example, there's been a massive amount of scientific work done around what's going on under the water over the last decade.
Yeah.
We need to bring that stuff together just to answer the question, rather, what would be the ideal places, and they have to be fairly large to work well.
Yeah.
Where are the ideal places that have the greatest impact on breeding and restoration of the 80% that we're not going to protect, or even 90 if some of it's only partial protection? There's a bit of science that needs to be brought together. It's mostly done, and that's good news, but it does need to be brought together in a way that can really lend themselves to being applied to these goals.
There does seem to be a unified effort here, but there are also some things going on in the Gulf that aren't quite so pro-environment. The dumping beyond barrier or the increase of a consent to dump large amounts of silt and sludge beyond Great Barrier Island, and I believe it has something to do with the dredging for the America's Cup. There was already a consent to dump stuff there, but it's gone up radically. Are we doing something with one hand while we're undermining ourselves with the other?
Right, well, let me just clarify something here. There's
there's
actually two dumping exercises going on, or will go on when processes take due course. One is about the materials under the various marinas around Auckland, where a private company is looking to vastly increase the amount they dumped outside the Gulf, the marine park.
Oh, it's outside the park, okay.
It is.
That's important to note,
Yeah, but it does have to traverse the park to get to that dumping site. That's pretty dirty stuff by and large, because it's sitting underneath boats that are that have all those potential pollutants and what have you associated with them.
Yeah,
that's being appealed in courts by, amongst others, people on Great Barrier.
Yeah,
or the iwi on the primary iwi on Great Barrier. Our concern, and I submitted to the independent panel that was set up by the Environmental Protection Agency to consider that one. All because of our advocacy role, all we could do was advocate for absolute minimising of risks.
Yeah.
And the risks for the Gulf, of course, were that the dumping was lost en route to the dumping site. It is off the continental shelf, so if you're going to dump anything, at least it's as safe, if that's the right word even, as it can be.
Yeah.
The other dumping that's being considered is from the Auckland the Port of Auckland, which has to deepen the channel through which the really huge shipping is coming.
Right. Thank you for clarifying those two issues, which I conflated.
The latter one is important to note. It's just shifting parts of a seabed to another part, which is actually a long-established, extremely deep dump that was set up for the military, actually. That, to my mind, is much, much, much more benign.
Yeah, okay. All right, good to get that clear. But it is a fair point that that human activity, human settlement is always going to have these negatives as well as what we're trying to do, which is to, you know, to recover parts of the Gulf.
Yes, I've long used a sentence that goes something like, however unintentionally, all people pollute.
Yeah, that's right. We have to sort of work as a broad group now rather than individual activists. Is that fair? Okay, so, John, you're in Wellington. Am I allowed to say you're moving there? Oh, I have. I said it. Are you moving to Wellington?
Yes. We had a grandchild on the island that left last year. And
you need to be near.
Yeah, and we had another one that was born here in Wellington from a different child of ours. So two of our only three grandchildren, and most likely there were any more coming, will be here. So, and we came from Wellington 8 years ago. Yeah. So I will be based here from now on.
But you'll
see out my term and come back to the island for a month, for a week, a month, for the next few months.
Well, that was really why I was poking into your private life, is just because, as a member of the board, just to reassure people, you will be back here for the meetings and the periods around the meetings as the term comes to a close, and we can assume you won't be standing for the Waiheke local board again.
Correct.
What about the Hauraki Gulf Forum, John? Will you continue with some involvement there?
I'd hope so. I've offered the current administration and the minister to be as helpful as I can, some of which might actually be useful for me to be here because of the central government processes that will be needed over the next year or three. So we're fortunate enough to have another house on the island, so we're still ratepayers.
Right, you can come and go. It isn't just a Waiheke issue anyway, is it? And it's not even just a Waiheke and Barrier issue, and it's not even just Waiheke Barrier and the other islands. This is a whole of New Zealand issue, isn't it? Because without a thriving Hauraki Gulf, I'm not quite sure who we are anymore.
The words in the Act include the fact that it is a nationally significant resource, words to that effect.
Absolutely. Well, John Mewson, thank you for all your efforts in making sure it comes back to be something we can be nationally proud of and enjoy now, future generations, and your grandchildren and their grandchildren. And I think that's the point, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
All right. Well, all the best, John. Thanks so much for your time this morning, and have a lovely weekend. And all the best to you and yours from Waiheke.
Thank you very much.
Kia ora.
Cheers. Bye.